1, 2, 3, 4.
You're listening to Inside the Outdoors, presented by People for Bikes and the Outdoor Industry Association, where we discuss the latest market trends in outdoor recreation. And now, here are your hosts, Kelly Davis and Toby DePaw.
Welcome to the Inside the Outdoors podcast. I'm your co-host, Toby DePaw. And in this episode, Kelly and I are joined by Matthew Tucker, Director of Client Development at Circana. Matt brings a wealth of experience, a passion for the outdoors, and a great sense of humor to our conversation. We'll discuss a few clear takeaways from Circana's recent retail sales reports and explore the insights and opportunities within the outdoor market landscape. Do you want to formally kick us off, Kelly?
I do want to formally kick us off, Toby.
All
welcome
right.
to Inside the Outdoors. We've got a very exciting show today. I'm really excited about having Matt Tucker on. Matt is the Director of Client Development, which I've hazed him for that title before, the Director of Client Development at Circana, OIA, and People for Bikes data partner. They provide us with retail sales data. And I can tell you that it provides me with a plethora of insights, especially insights that I can triangulate with my other data. But I want to give Matt an opportunity to introduce himself, and then I want to kind of hear Matt and Toby get to know each other a little better, since I heard that they've only shaken hands once.
Barely. Brushed hands at best. I mean, I handed you the badge and it was over before it began. I'm thinking about it every day.
And I cherish that badge.
Welcome, Matt. We're glad you're here.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me today.
You want to give us a little bit more background on you and kind of how you ended up there at Circana?
Yeah, absolutely. First off, I just want to say this is totally bringing back some memories. In college, For 2 years, I had an FM radio show on 91.7 WCUR, The Curve. And like tens of people listened to it, but it was a blast. But definitely brings back some memories. So how did I get involved with Circana? So first off, I just celebrated by myself my 5-year anniversary with Circana and NPD. I guess I should quickly mention that if you're not familiar with Circana, we are the result of the merger of the NPD group and IRI. That happened just a little over a year ago when we rebranded. Prior to that, I worked for 5 years with Sports One Source and SSI Data, and it's through them that I actually met Kelly years ago. And NPD acquired SSI Data. I was one of a handful that came over through NPD, and I've been able to continue working with sports equipment and sports brands, retailers, to help identify trends and grow their business. And, you know, really what we do at Circana is our goal is to transform complexity into clarity. And we do that with the data services and resources we have.
It's interesting. I mean, one of the things that I always run into with Circana data is, you know, what it is and what it isn't. The outdoor panel, you know, and we'll talk about panel methodology quickly in a second. But the outdoor panel is made up of what you call ASSG, or Athletics, Specialty, and Sporting Goods. So the Dick's, REI's, Big Five Sporting Goods of the world live there, and we get their retail data. Then we get independent outdoor specialty retailers. We get basically a projection of that data across all specialty in the market. And then we get retail e-commerce, which is the online sales of both ASSG and independent specialty outdoor retail, and gives us an idea of what's going on in the online world, in the retail online world specifically. What we don't get is mass market. We don't get Amazon. We don't get direct consumer. And I want you to talk about what Circana data covers and what it does in an outdoor and at People for Bikes.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, thanks for walking through the three, as we call them, the core outdoor channels that are included in the OIA report. And, you know, we see these as kind of the leading trend makers. Don't get me wrong. There is a lot of volume coming in from the big box and mass retailers. You know, it's arguable, you know, whether that's true outdoor in some opinions, particularly for manufacturers. But there are some brands that do really well at the Amazons, Walmarts, Target of the world, selling outdoor products. So, you know, I guess it's important for folks to know that we have it and it's available. not part of the OIA report. Should it be? I don't know. Maybe it will be one day, depending on how the market moves. But as for now, you know, focus on those three channels. In many cases, the trends at a category level are going to be similar, which is fantastic. But, you know, if you do sell in, if you're a brand listening and you sell in and you want to learn more about that market, let us know. People for Bikes, it's a little bit different. For cycling equipment, we track two distinct channels. So one is independent bike dealers. And I think, you know, most people are familiar with that definition. And then a secondary channel is we call rest of market. Essentially, any retailer that sells bikes and bike equipment that's not an IBD, right? So a lot of that is coming from the from like what we would call the ASSG channel and also big box. So, you know, as you can imagine, you know, similar products, very different price points in many cases. So it's really interesting to see the variance between those two channels.
Yeah, I get a little jealous of you, Matt, because you have this sort of, you have this omniscient view of all of Circana's data. You can see everything. You can see every channel in which they may be selling outdoor goods. You can see the price points. You can see brand share. You can see, and People for Bikes gets inventory. Outdoor does not. I believe that's true. Is that correct?
Right.
Jealous. We, you know, I remember, I know you give you margins, which is really nice to have. I mean, there's a lot more to what Circana can offer to a brand than what I provide as a view of the outdoor market and a view of trends in the outdoor market. And I want to make that really clear for people that are interested in the data, that, you know, you can get a much, much, much more granular view of data in your specific category if you want to purchase that data from Circana. And one of the nice things for brands in outdoor that do that is that they can buy that and then use OIA's sort of overall market data to get some context for what's happening in their specific category. And we're finding that brands are using that very effectively more and more. And, you know, we've been offering the data since this, I guess, January is when we started rolling out the data for our members, and we're hearing that more and more. Are you seeing that, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's exactly what I recommend to our subscribing clients. You know, they may subscribe to the detailed information down to the brand and item level for their specific categories and maybe some that they're thinking about moving into. But to be able to see the overall context and the trends of all the categories across apparel, footwear, accessories, and equipment in the OAA report, I think is tremendously helpful to the industry.
Yeah, well, it's definitely been helpful for our members. It helps me get a lot of context about what I'm seeing in places like participation data and consumer intelligence data, where I'm seeing like so many new people entering the market, and they're all just sort of casual. You know, they're not like super into it. I took up fly fishing this year. Actually, I'm terrible at it. I'm really trying hard though. And I recognize that I'm not normal. I mean, I'm going a couple times a week because I'm super, super duper into it. But the new participant, not that way. They go for a hike. They go fishing with their buddy. You know, that's it. And it's a couple times a year. And, you know, I think specialty shops are having a hard time engaging that consumer. So your data has been really, really helpful in painting that picture in the outdoor market. I bet Toby has about 10 ways that it's helped PFB members understand the bike market a little bit better too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I meant to put out this disclaimer first earlier in the episode, but you know, I'm just kind of a spectator in this conversation. I'm in awe of the minds that I get to share this conversation with, and I feel a little bit or a lot out of my element here. But it's always been something that the data has always been something that I've like been a fanboy of at PFB, you know, just watching what Patrick does and what the subcommittee does and what we pull out of it, and always been kind of, yeah, just impressed with kind of how you guys can read the tea leaves so well and deliver something so powerful back to us. So I feel like there's just this massive amount of data that Circana sees and Matt that you see, and then you digest it so much, and then that's delivered to us at PFB, and then we kind of get to refine it and polish it even more, and then deliver something to our members But there really is so much there if you're willing to keep, you know, sifting through it and dig through it. I've used this analogy before and I'll use it again, but I often feel like you know, there's the data is just this pantry full of ingredients, and it's our job to kind of deliver a cake or a cupcake. And so we can take that and assemble it in such a way and kind of, we know how to put it together, not change it, but put it together and present it in a way that's delicious and kind of digestible. And so I think it's, you know, it's part science and part magic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fairly sure I did not answer the segue you gave me.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a genuine response. And yeah, you know, I do the same thing. I get the data and I you know, I have to analyze it and explain it in a way that everybody in the world can understand it. I should keep an eighth grader here in my basement to like, just have to like, tell me whether or not they get what I'm saying. And they're probably just going to go, no, 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 until I get it that simplified. Cause I want it to be actionable. For instance, in an outdoor market right now, wow, specialty shops are suffering. I mean, wow. I got the February data, Matt, and it almost hurt my heart to see it. So especially it's down about 20%. And it happens, I mean, I'm seeing it month over month over month. They continue to be down 20%. And that's average. That's average. You know, they're explaining fewer and fewer dollars in the market. But then I see bright spots in the market. And then when I see that data, I think, okay, if I'm a manufacturer, what does that mean to me? I mean, especially a small manufacturer like that, there's opportunity in specialty right now. If you want to sell into specialty, there's opportunity. They are looking for ways to figure out how to solve this problem, especially with that casual consumer I was talking about. Yeah, I'm seeing hotspots on the market too. It's really cool to look through this data. I can do it all day. I could, Matt. I can talk about road running shoes all day.
Yeah, sometimes I do. And if we weren't limited in time today, we probably would. But yeah, I absolutely agree. And Toby, I think the way you described the making the cake is similar to a lot of the data journey, especially those that are data curious and like just getting involved. I mean, you have to start somewhere, I would say. Yeah. And it's awesome to see the transition of, you know, whether it's a brand or a retailer that really gets into it, because it is exciting and, you know, but there's so much and you have to wrap your head around it. And it takes a while to digest. But once it's applied, then it can be applied almost anywhere, you know, whether it's, you know, the new product development, sales, marketing, and you know, hopefully up to the strategy itself of, you know, where to play and how to win. And that's what's pretty fascinating right now, as you described, Kelly, with the different sub-channels, you know, in some ways having some different trends. But yeah, I'd love to talk about some of the bright spots that I'm seeing, especially in the year to date.
Yeah, just to frame that a little bit more, the folks at home can't see the way you two are beaming, but you both have like new, fresh data that you're just, you know, you're analyzing, you're presenting, and there's news, there's something to share now. And so I'm just kind of using that as a setup for the rest of the conversation today is like, where are we? What are you looking at now? And what's it telling you? What kind of is the latest reveal that you two are reacting to right now for those of us at home? Like, what are you looking at now that you didn't have a month ago?
I'm looking at February data because I just got it and I've analyzed it now. I even produced a video, go figure. I do 3-minute videos for leadership members because that's how much they want the data digested. So if you don't want to look at it, it's like, okay, you don't want to read the analysis. Great. Watch the video. Don't have time for any of that. Here's the data. Don't have time for any of that. I mean, call me. I'm at that point of customer service with our members because I want them to use it. I so want them to use it. So I'm looking at February data. I get month-to-month data that we provide to our leadership members specifically. We do an annual report that I just finished doing. Matt was part of a really great webinar that we did. I thought that was a really great webinar, by the way. I usually wouldn't say that. I thought that one went really well until we didn't record the whole thing. And then I was like, damn it. I was three beers in when I learned that. Like, oh,
yeah, that was disappointing. But no, that was fun. I hope to do it again. And I love, joining forces in those kind of scenarios with you and with People for Bikes, because then I'm able to share an even broader perspective of what we have, you know, and I love seeing some of the trends in the total retail market when you include like CPG and how it's competing with the general merchandise and then kind of funneling it down. So yeah, looking forward to next time.
Yeah, I love the comparisons you did with other industries. I mean, with it, when you talked about beauty was really the only industry that was seeing material growth. That was mm-hmm. interesting to me. And then just look across the economy and you can see it. I guess in the end, I'm interested in human behavior, and all the data just sort of describes to us what people are doing. Mm-hmm. I think that's a tremendous power of retail data, is that you can see what people are doing in the market. And it's not like what they say they're going to do. It's not what they plan to do. It's not what they're interested in. It's what they're buying and where they're buying it.
Right. Yeah. And actually, you bring up something that I was hoping to note. So far, we've been talking about point of sale data, retail tracking. I was looking at some of our other services, you know, again, to try to triangulate. We have something called Checkout, which is a longitudinal receipt panel. And one of the things I was looking at for outdoor, which we just launched in the last year, we have camping categories, coolers, not each and every single category, but some of the really important ones to the outdoor industry. And one of the things that we saw that aligns with some of your work with participation is that we had the number of camping buyers were up slightly in the last 12 months through February. Purchase occasions, spend per purchase down.
Yeah, your spending's down, I bet.
Yeah, exactly. So they were actually, the units per purchase was up slightly to like 1.5 units. Of course, nobody buys 1.5 units, but you know what I mean?
Well, you're not gonna have kids either, Matt, so.
Exactly. it's pretty fun to see that stuff and see how it compares to the retail tracking as well. And the casual use, because I think that, you know, is hand in hand.
Yeah. It's so interesting to be able to triangulate data. And we talk about that a lot. You talk about it. I mean, anybody in research talks about this. It's a navigation term. It's the idea is that, the more points of reference you have and you shoot angles at things. I actually have worked a sextant, like an old fashioned one, because my ex-husband was in the Coast Guard and he was a quartermaster. So, you know, that's what they do. They navigate. And in the Coast Guard, they still taught those guys the old way. You know, this is back in the 90s, and they had to do it by hand. Like they had books about star positions. In research, the idea is that you're shooting different angles with different data sets so that you can better understand the position in the market of what is the consumer doing? What are they buying? What are they thinking? How are they feeling? How many are there? Then that's triangulation, and that's what Matt's talking about, and he's spot on. And you've got to keep monitoring the data. You could have a hypothesis that could change in a day, mm-hmm. right? And so one of the things that we're seeing in the market right now in outdoor is sales are down. Right? We were down 1.8% in February overall in the market, but I'm seeing participation continue to rise. Right? More people are out there every day. And, you know, we've got to figure out why that's going on. If we didn't have those two data sets, we wouldn't understand that variance at all. And we wouldn't have that illustration of what's going on with buying patterns of the outdoor consumer. And the outdoor consumer has changed. And that's amazing that data can show us that.
Yeah. So on that topic, I have a question for you about your participation report, if you don't mind.
Sure.
So, you know, you talk a lot about casual versus core.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody's a little bit different. This is going to be an N1 conversation, N of one. But when you talk about core, is it core to the specific activity, or does it cross? Is it, you know, a core outdoor participant?
It can be either. We measure core in each specific activity. So, for mm-hmm. example, in order to be a core runner, you have to do 42 times a year or more. In order to be, maybe it's 52, it's once a week. So it's 52 times or more. So almost every core runner is a core participant, because in order to be a core participant in outdoor overall, you just have to do something, anything, cross participation, 51 times a year or more. So in each activity, it's different. So in camping, it's 13 times a year or more makes you core. In skiing, 8 times a year or more makes you core. So it depends on this. And we note that in every single sport activity report. But overall, we're talking about overall outdoor participation. We are looking across the board at those 51 different activities that we measure and saying, have you participated in any of these? Mm. And, you know, how many times a year did you participate in any of these? So that has to be 51 plus in order for me to define someone as core.
Got it.
Even if they're a core climber, even like and defined as core because they climb more than 13 times a year or camp 13 times a year. So you can be core and not core, but you can't be core and not core.
That makes sense. Yeah. And I was trying to see you understand how I fit in personally, because over the years, you know, I've been a core cyclist, skier, skateboarder, fly fisherman, kayaker, hacky sacker, like all of those things. And now, you know, I've got kids, so I feel like I'm casual for everything, but when you combine it, I'm core, right?
Exactly. That's exactly how you can be core and not core.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, and living here in Denver, that's kind of what I see. Well, among my friends, neighbors, is, you know,
so your cousin, of course.
Yeah, my cousin, of course. We all participate in so many different things, and you can't give every category the spending attention that the industries crave from us. Because one year I may invest my money in fly fishing, then the next year it's a rooftop tent, then the next year it's an upgrade to the bike, and then it's, you know, then you start the cycle over.
Yeah, you and me both, Matt. I've turned into that too. I mean, I used to be super core triathlon, super core bike, super core run. Forced myself to be super core swim. But yeah, and I mean, now it's like, you know, I'm hiking 30 times a year or something and then going for a bike ride and that. I mean, I don't even, if I had kids, they'd be adults by now anyway, so it doesn't really matter. My dogs, they super like that we walk 25 miles a week. So I'm core and maybe core in one or two activities and that's it. And fly fishing is one of them. And you mentioned that, and it kills me because I've spent probably thousands of dollars on fly equipment this year alone. I came home yesterday and there's a box on my porch. I'm like, what can this be? And of course it's flies. Of course it is. Mm-hmm. Because late at night, I'm like, I want that one and that one and that one. That's why you want core. You know, that's why it's important for us to understand this trend and try and encourage at least a percentage of these new casual participants to be core like us. Just do it all, man. It's super fun. And get into it and learn new things. And I probably won't be a core fly fisherwoman forever, but certainly this year I'm going to be.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. You know, my first year of fly fishing was very expensive. And like, I was obsessed with it. I mean, I was still commuting at that point. So I was listening to fly fishing podcasts to and from work, you know, taking classes.
YouTube. I'm in love with the Orvix guys, by the way. I want to talk to them like all the time. And I kind of do. And I'm thinking about casting to the back of your room right now. Right now. I'm like, how long of a leader would I need? Would he notice? I don't know. Would it be a nice presentation right in front of Matt? Would he eat the fly? I don't know. Maybe. That's how bad it is. That's
right.
And the industry does want that. And we had that years ago. I mean, years ago, that it was a lifestyle. You know, if I was a snowboarder, I had a snowboarder lifestyle, which wasn't necessarily incredibly healthy. But I had it. And I knew what to wear. And I knew what to listen to. And I knew what to smoke. And I knew all of those things. That's just not happening anymore. And the sort of the face of outdoor is changing. And we're all kind of this way. I think this is a good thing for outdoor. I think this new participant is also a lot more diverse. I think more people are getting access to the outdoors and feeling comfortable where we recreate. And I think that's an amazing thing. Now we just need to get them to buy more stuff.
Yeah, I don't want to derail our data conversation, but I have a lot of thoughts about this type of thing. Because I think from my retail days and event promoter days, I thought a lot about identity, like how people identify themselves and or not. You know, I found it interesting when people were what I would consider great customers that didn't consider themselves cyclists. And so I always wondered, like, what's that turn? Like, at what point do they call themselves cyclists? And like you just said, a core runner runs more than one time a week. Like, I would never identify as a runner, but I run a lot more than one time a week. You know, and so I just think, what's that conversion? Because then there's like an identity piece that you're trying to belong or fit in or buy the things that kind of make you yeah, identify as that thing. I think all of that is fascinating. That's a different podcast.
It is. I wanted to say about it too.
The piece about this kind of new casual wave just represents immense opportunity when I put my retailer cap on. If I can take my old retailer cap off, if I can I remove the specialty and the exclusivity and the kind of like narrow thinking of like, I'm a bike shop, I talk about bike shop things and I only sell this kind of bike among bikes. No, if I can be more welcoming, get more people of different styles and who would never identify as cyclists to come into my bike shop. And maybe I'll carry some things that are cycling adjacent, you know, some outdoor gear or some different clothing that's not bike specific. Like that to me is just massive opportunity because you have this entire wave of people who are showing us that they're going to be in the store more often buying fewer things or maybe fewer or lesser value things. Like that's what the data is showing us. So let's give them more opportunities to, let's give them more things to consider when they're in the shop more times. Rather than hyper focus on a specific niche. So I just, this is my kind of then processing of the data you presented a moment ago. And it's like opportunity, just raging opportunity, I think, in front of us. And Matt, some of the recent trends that we saw come through for February in cycling were showing this optimism or kind of showing some promise for this year. Mm-hmm. You want to talk a little bit more about that?
Do tell.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I was digging into some of the cycling data, and I'm excited. I think the year's off to a good start. As a note, everything I'll mention in the next couple of sentences are based on the year to date. So January and February versus last year, and March is coming out soon. So we won't be long till we can see the whole first quarter, but a couple things that I noticed, and Toby, I'd love to hear if anything caught your eye as well. But some of the things that have been really moving the needle over the last couple of years, obviously e-bikes has been the biggest contributor to growth over the last 5 years, no surprise. And you may recall, and I mentioned at the BLC a couple weeks ago that for the first time in 23, we had some soft sales in e-bikes, but thus far year to date, you know, we're back. We're positive again after the stalled growth. E-bikes are growing faster at rest of market retailers than they are at IBD, but IBD is starting to grow again. We're seeing a big push from the e-cargo category, which I think Patrick had called out in his analysis as well. And I'm excited about this because we just added an e-cargo and an e-folding bike subclass to the data with the February release. So for you PFB members out there, that's kind of a new feature, pulled out from the bucket of other e-bikes. Really interesting stuff there. I'm excited to see what's happening in mountain bikes. You know, mountain bikes have really did great at the peak of the bike boom and then have declined ever since. But, you know, we're back in action. Dollars and units are up overall in the total measured market. And we're really seeing the increases from full suspension mountain bikes.
Yeah.
And you know, it's fascinating too to see what the rest of market retailers are picking up on, from the IBD. I mean, if you go to some of the big box stores now, like you can get a full suspension mountain bike that looks pretty nice.
Yeah.
Now, my IBD friends are going to argue with me and say that, you know, those aren't real bikes or they're, you know, they shouldn't be used in downhill riding. But for $300, you can get, you know, a decent full suspension mountain bike now at a big box dealer. So, you know, that's where I think the IBDs can do a good job of helping educate the differences, hopefully without isolating those, those potential buyers and, driving them to the other the other retailers. Gravel bikes continue to do well.
Yeah.
You know, the trail running, trail riding, anything really off-road has been doing well. But, you know, we're up double digits in IBD in dollars and units year to date for gravel bikes. So excited about that.
That's standard gravel bikes. We're you know, apart from e-bikes. I just want to make the distinction you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that gravel growth will continue. I think there's just this layer of practicality where before we didn't have that as a subcategory and people would buy either a mountain bike or a road bike. And then you find out there's this bike that can do so many more things. So we're going to see, I just think we're just going to continue to see the growth of that category.
Mm-hmm. Such a blast. And, you know, people, I think are into it because of the safety, you know, getting away from the cars. Just a couple days after we were in Tucson, I picked up my bike. I had my my gravel bike converted to tubeless, and super pumped about that because I've been loving it with mountain for a while. Yep.
Nice.
But I love the nostalgia of gravel riding personally. Like, it reminds me of riding mountain bikes like in the 90s.
Well, it's the same tire width.
Right? Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. It's a blast.
Yeah.
I've noticed that there are a lot of very bike specific parks popping up. I mean, I see them all over North Carolina, like Hendersonville. I'm seeing them pop up here. I'm noticing just on my home trails, you know, they're building some downhill with berms and features. It's pretty amazing. And I've seen that develop over the past number of years. How is that affecting that one of the problems is you've got to pedal back up, and I'm seeing a lot more e-mountain bikes doing that. But has the proliferation of these parks and sort of super groomed trails had an impact on mountain bike riding in the past couple of years? Are you seeing any of that in retail data at all?
That's like a no. So that means you're on the hook for the answer. She said the word data. She wasn't.
Yeah, I know. I thought that question was for Toby until you said data. But I mean, sadly, with the point of sale data, we can see what is sold. We don't necessarily know who bought it
and
how they're going to use it.
And where it's good.
Yeah, exactly. At least in the POS tracking. And it's unfortunate, but, you know, you can tease out a lot of the trends. But, you know, especially with like outdoor equipment, you know, if you go to the REI on a Saturday morning and see, we've got a flagship store here in Denver, it's hard to tell the difference between like gear collectors and people who are going to buy it and immediately use it that day.
Yeah, I was kind of baiting you guys because what I wanted you to talk about is what you can't learn from the data. And, you know, also that, I mean, that's an interesting trend just for me. I'm keeping an eye on it because sort of the manufacturer park is making its way into bike and has for a while. It's also making its way into surf, which is going to be really interesting. I kind of want to get on the front of what kind of impact that might have on their participant base. In some cases, do you parse the data geographically for people for bikes?
It's national level right now.
Okay.
And I guess I can mention, we actually are working, we have an internal regional breakout that we're testing for releasability right now. So stay tuned for that. And if it works for cycling, I'm hoping that then we'll take a look for outdoor as well.
I would like that. That seems like a good development for me.
Yeah. So yeah. Our data sets really depend. It's all about releasability and, you know, what we're allowed to share with the retailers still providing us the information to share. So some of our data sets, especially those that are, you know, weekly, whether it's, you know, the apparel and footwear and things like that, there are some opportunities to look at geography, DMM, and, you know, even do like with our analytics team, create custom geographies.
Yeah. I mean, when I think about how you can use that data, imagine if we could look at seasonal data and see, you know, basically that bike sales are following the weather. I mean, I see that in my own equipment categories. For example, you know, we've got cold weather boot sales, not great at all. However, you know, running shoe sales continue to be just red hot, especially road running shoes. And I assume a lot of people are just buying those to so that they can wear them everywhere. But it's super interesting to think about seasonal use. And we could actually imagine if we could see, like in a specific region, the effect of weather on retail sales.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So we could see this year, February was warm and there was 40% less snow than there was last February. Did it affect the sales patterns? You bet it did. You bet it did. But I can't. I mean, that's one thing I can't look at yet. But I'm going to get there, Matt.
Yeah. So a couple things about that. One, probably for the last year, I've been presenting a slide in my deck with clients of NOAA has a map of the $1 billion plus disasters in the United States. And if I recall, there were 28 independent $1 billion disasters, weather disasters in the United States last year. And they kind of keep that on a year-to-date basis. You should check it out. But that's kind of fun to see the impact on sales. The other thing that that I just saw from some of our industry analysts, they put together a really intriguing slide about the shifts in population overlaid with the like overall retail sales. And it lines up really well of, you know, the states whose population are growing versus declining match up with where the retail sales are growing and declining.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems obvious,
but
it's often overlooked.
Yeah, it's not. It's not that obvious. We think it's obvious.
Right.
And somebody could say it, but I'd say, yeah, well, you know, I would like to see your data and you are the one that have the data. So that's amazing. And I would love to see that. I've got so many ideas for regression projects in outdoor that include weather, that include retail sales, participation. I'd like to get down to a more granular level, especially geographically and demographically first. We'll see. I mean, these are dream projects.
Yeah.
It's like that. I would like to create the theory of everything. Of course I do.
Right.
We're working towards that. Definitely.
So may I say one more thing about bikes?
No, you may not.
Before we get off the topic.
No, I was going to bring us right back to bike. Go for
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Oh, come on.
Great. Yeah. The last thing I wanted to comment on is the children's bikes as well as BMX year to date. So, you know, one of the things that I know People for Bikes had put out is the S&P Global forecasts, and they had forecasted that children's bikes would, you know, kind of pick up again before others, and we're seeing that in the data for sure. So again, most of children's bikes are sold at rest of market retailers. No surprise there, but you know, this is something that, you know, the bikes that were purchased a few years ago for kids, at this point they need another one, right? So it makes sense with the purchase cycle that would kick off. But you know, it aligns with participation heading in the right direction. So, you know, stay tuned for that as we go deeper into the spring.
Yeah, to me, I always think about seeds. Like, I'm so happy there is that rest of market mass retailer getting those kids bikes out there, because those seeds are planted and, you know, we can do everything we can to help them grow and then earn those sales kind of through the different channels later. I think that throughout the kind of the January and February numbers, to be non-scientific about it, there are good vibes. You know, there is promising indicators of things heading in a good direction, both just in minor uptick in participation so far this year, and then minor uptick in there have been more bikes sold in January and February this year than last year. So that those are moving, that's moving in the right direction. And so I'll take it. Any tailwind, we'll take it.
I have a question about bike. Toby, how does your data now, how are your sales data now compared to your sales data in 2019?
You can't put me on the spot like this. I don't even play an analyst on TV. I'm never going to be Patrick Kelly, no matter.
Matt, can you answer that?
Yeah, Matt will know better.
Okay.
Next. Yeah, you can phone a friend Toby.
Yeah.
I've got year to date, We are below, well, we're above last year, as Toby just said.
Yeah.
We are above 2019, above 2020.
But I mean, is it big or is it, what's, can you give me an idea? I know you don't want to give me the total size, but if you would, I would love that. If not, ballpark.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I mean, let's see. I don't have the actual percent change. I could calculate that real quick. But I mean, above 2020, we're above in bike by over $80 million in bicycles alone.
That's encouraging. And I was, the reason I asked that is when I think about kids' bikes, when I think about children's bikes in America, if a kid learns how to ride a bike, the lifetime value of that customer goes up exponentially. So the bellwether of the kids bike metric is really, it's important to me, because if a kid learns how to ride a bike, then they're going to do all kinds of other things outdoors. It opens many, many doors for them. This is another way to think about this data. You know, what can you learn about pathways to entry into various activities in outdoor, being kids bikes so critical, so critical. I'm happy to hear that. And I'm happy to hear that, you know, the as we gain participants across outdoor and including bike, that the sales are actually matching that. And it's good to hear that at the beginning of the year, the bike industry is doing a little bit better.
Yeah. I mean, I think for a while there was a false sense of security based on growth that was derived from increased average selling prices and things. So it's nice to see that units as a better indicator of demand are improving in a lot of these categories.
Yeah. What does that look like? What is the unit change or growth? Or hopefully it sounds like it's going to be growth.
Yeah. So we have year-over-year growth in units for total bicycles. We're looking at a 4% increase over last year. So, units are down slightly from pre-pandemic levels, but you know, definitely heading in the right direction. And like I said, with some of the key categories like full suspension bikes, units, it's not just dollars anymore that are up. You know, we're up in units for mountain, for road. Road, we have gravel within that, so a lot of that's driven by road. But you know, e-bikes, children's bikes, like all the most important categories, units are up year over year.
That's amazing. What about, do you have a category in e-bikes for kids e-bikes, or is that just e-bike?
Well, you know, a lot of the manufacturers
are hesitant to
market to children.
She's trying to trap you, Matt. We're not.
Yeah.
She did this with Ash.
Come on in.
The roving bands of youth. So we're not going to touch this with a pole.
I did hear that. So that's one of the reasons, Kelly, that we extracted the cargo and folding from the other, because most of the mass, kind of those smaller wheeled ones that kids are riding, would be in that other bucket.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you can, it's pretty apparent when you look at the brands, I mean, especially the item level, but some of the folding bikes are, you know, not your traditional commuter folding bike. They are, you know, they are the kids, you know, the ones from like Jetson and other brands like that you could get at like a Costco or something. But so that's going to be in the other, and it's pretty apparent when you dig in.
Okay. Yeah. Ironically, I have a folding e-bike. It's actually pretty juicy. It goes super fast. I got it from GoFundMe in the Netherlands, but nice. I bought it because I was flying a lot and I could throw it in the plane and fly somewhere and then, you know, bike somewhere from a municipal airport. It was amazing. The reason I ask about kids e-bikes isn't because I want to talk about roving bands of kids. I actually don't have any problem with roving bands of kids on e-bikes. You know, there are worse things they could do. But that's my opinion. I understand that civically it could be a problem. But I'm interested because I've been in several venues now where demos were going on, and I've watched these families come up and the kids say they want to try the e-bike, and the parents are like completely cool with that. And it's a trend that I'm just really, really super interested in, because if that's how they're, you know, how they're consuming bike riding when they're a kid, I would assume that that's going to continue. And that has all kinds of implications for trends across outdoor, in hunting, in fishing, on trails. I mean, it's the implications are massive and myriad. That's why I was asking about it, not to try and trap you into some. By the way, I'm still casting into the back of both of your houses.
Totally agree, though. I mean, as a parent, we're to the point where like anything that can get our kids outside or like away from their computers, we're cool with.
Okay.
You know, if they want an e-bike, they haven't asked for it yet. They've asked for VR headsets and we've said no, but if they ask for an e-bike, I don't care if, sure. You know, I'm a traditionalist, but I have an e-bike too. And for so many applications, I love it.
As a parent now of two drivers, I would love if one of or both of my driver kids would swap that out for an e-bike, because then the stress on sharing the car among four drivers would be a lot less.
Your insurance might go down a bit too. If that's...
Yeah. So we have a limited amount of time with Matt today. And so I wanted to just kind of, there was a question in the outline that I always think is very fascinating, which is just how can brands maximize the utility of this data? And I'll kind of like posit a specific question. When I look at the kind of that new subcategory of electric folding bicycles, and I see that massive market share that's being held by the rest of market, that is a neutral data point. And I'm looking at this where it says 12% of electric folding bikes are sold through IBDs, and then the rest is sold through rest of market, 88%. That is a neutral number. That's a neutral fact. When I look at that, I'm thinking, does that mean that if I'm a brand that sells through the IBD channel, am I missing the market? Should I be pursuing that electric folding bike customer? Should I be spending more energy there? Like, I guess that's kind of like a question. And then how would I maximize that data point and then turn it into action? If that's too narrow, feel free to answer it more broadly. But I look at that and I just see it as such a drastic 88% sold through rest of market. That means IBD is missing something. Maybe I'm leaping to a conclusion or front loading it with an opinion, but go ahead and if you have any...
Well, I guess what I would say is, you know, if you think about the distribution, part of the reason rest of market retailers are successful in this space is because they have the product. It's available. Consumers are going into those stores probably not to buy a folding e-bike, and they're seeing them. It's sort of like in-store advertising, in my opinion. Kids are seeing them there and asking for them and for their birthdays or Christmas or whatever that may be. And the price point is good at those retailers because, again, of the supply and the distribution. Will IBDs be able to take over that segment of electric bikes? I don't think so anytime soon. Can they get a piece of it? Absolutely. I don't think they should completely change their business model to focus on folding e-bikes marketed towards kids, but I think that should be an offering. They might be surprised of what comes from it.
Yeah. And then thank you for answering that more specifically. More broadly, you know, what are some other examples of the ways, you know, this is a product, this is a benefit to being a PFB member and an OIA member. We're delivering this delicious cupcake of data, and it's up to them to take that and go do something with it. What is that they should do? Kind of how do they maximize these benefits?
Yeah. So usually with my clients, whether they're, you know, a subscriber or looking at, more of a syndicated report through one of the associations, I recommend, like, first off, you should be using it as for general tracking, like on a monthly basis, just to have the pulse, to kind of test the temperature. And I think in a really easy way, whether you're a brand or a retailer, if your internal sales, if you're outpacing what you're seeing in this report, you're gaining share. If you're not, you're losing share. And what can you do about it? So I think there's kind of that, like, you know, kind of the just the general temperature. And then it's like, there's the exploration. You know, mm-hmm. yeah. what other categories could we be good at? You know, what should we consider, especially at the development level of like, oh, we've got this great idea. Oh, well, that market's declining significantly. It's not as big as we thought. Like, we'd have to gain 12% share of this category, even just to break even. I mean, that alone, the savings of time and money and energy yeah. that you can make from like that quick realization is reason enough to look at it. And then I think it, when you look, you get ideas, you make your own hypotheses, and that's where you should dig deeper and really try to get to the bottom of it, whether that's something that, you know, you can get from Kelly or People for Bikes or, you know, directly from Circana. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of the next step, is start peeling it back and saying, okay, this category's up, which brands are driving it? Okay. Of those brands, which items are doing well, which price segments are doing well. And that's when it gets really fun and really powerful.
And that's why I'm so jealous of you, because you have that view. And yeah, my members often use it for product design. You know, where's our next hot product going to come from? Also for marketing. I mean, just yeah. measuring what's going on. I think about the insulated mugs, tumblers, and cups category right now. And the brand mix is going to shift. I mean, I'm watching it. Even though I can't see brands, I'm going to be like just bugging you, Matt, to understand that, because you know, you've got different cohorts that are adopting different brands of that. And it's up, it's still up almost 200%. It's kind of nuts.
Mm-hmm. So, well, and some of these brands are really expanding on their success. Did you see the recent launches from Stanley?
I did.
With the cup carriers and soft-sided coolers. You've got, you know, Shark Ninja launching into coolers more recently after their success with outdoor cooking. So, you know, definitely, it's going to be fun to watch in the next year.
It really is. And it's going to be fun to watch them use that data. And I know that we're out of time with you, and I want to be respectful of your time. I want to thank you, Matt. This is great. Really looking forward to getting these out there. I think this was just, what a great conversation. I could do this every Friday.
Good times. Don't tempt me with a good time.
Yeah, this was great, Matt. It was great to chat with you more beyond just the badge pass. That was a great mm-hmm. start for us, but I'm really excited about the direction this relationship's headed. Thank you for joining us today. And I hope we get a chance to chat again soon.
Oh, we're going to have Matt back. We got to have Matt back for sure.
We do.
Yeah, we hardly even got into outdoors. So yeah, we'll do it again soon.
Yeah. Thanks a ton, Matt.
Thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
Thanks for listening to Inside the Outdoors, presented by People for Bikes and the Outdoor Industry Association. We'll see you next time.